What is up, and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always by my co-host, David Drogemeyer. And today we are joined by John Kegley as well, one of the original founding members of the show. But before we get started, I have to tell you guys this episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. Before we get into it, we are three writers who got our start at San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, and we've been covering the Chargers now for over five seasons. We also do our own Facebook live show, Chargers Domination Live, which airs weekly during the season. And now this is our third season as the host of the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. All right, guys, well, we hope that you came back with all your fingers after the weekend and had a very safe 4th of July. I hope everyone had fun. Got to see some fireworks if they wanted to and all that. But we do have a very fun show for you guys today. For the news segment at the beginning, we're going to be talking about a list of the projected stat leaders in the NFL. None of the Chargers made the list, but one was a runner-up. So we'll get into that in the news and some of the other players who could lead the league in some other statistics. So we'll get into that first. In the second segment, we're going to be talking about an article getting into the five burning questions for the Chargers offense, talking about Tyrod Taylor, Justin Herbert, and some other questions the Chargers have going into 2020. And then to wrap the show up today, we're going to be talking about Austin Ekeler and his contract. We have an article talking about if Austin Ekeler, even as a running back, has a bargain second contract. So we'll get into that to wrap up the show. But let's go ahead and get into it. Over the weekend, Bleacher Report came out with an article projecting the top stat getters for each big statistic in the NFL. And no Los Angeles Chargers made the list. This is Daniel Wade, joined by David Drogemeyer with your Locked On Chargers lead story. Bleacher Report's Maurice Moten predicted NFL stat leaders over the weekend in an article, and no Chargers made the list, but he did show some love to one of the Chargers' best players when he chose Joey Bosa to finish second in the NFL in tackles for loss, only behind Aaron Donald, who he projected to have 23. He projected 20 for Joey Bosa, which I think is a realistic number for Bosa, who is a very well-rounded player and can take down the quarterback as well as stop running backs and wide receivers behind the line of scrimmage. None of the Chargers made the list as the top stat getters, but Joey Bosa definitely deserves to be mentioned in this list and still comes in as the top AFC player in tackles for loss.
Yeah, last year, Daniel, he was tied for 4th in the NFL in tackles for loss with 18. And 3 out of his 4 years in the league, he's had over 10 tackles for loss. And it seems like he just gets better and better year after year. He's also a guy who's had incredible success getting to the quarterback. But the thing that gets lost in translation with Joey Bosa is just how well-rounded he is. Like you mentioned, he has the ability to square up and be able to take ball carriers down in the backfield. That kind of quickness and that kind of ability from a guy Joey Bosa's size, who's 6'5", 280 pounds, is truly unheard of. Joey Bosa is a very rare specimen. Unfortunately, he's not on this list as the top tackle for loss guy, but he has all the potential in the world, Daniel, to maybe be at the top of the league in sacks one of these years very, very soon.
Yeah, I think he definitely has that potential. I think the first thing that comes along with that is just playing a full 16-game season, because that really is the only question into whether Joey Bosa is going to produce 10-plus sacks, and he's done that even in seasons where he didn't play the entire season. So to think of a 15, 16, 17 sack season for Joey Bosa is not out of the question by any means. But I think lost in this as well is some of the Chargers who could potentially be up there to be the top stat getter in some of these other categories. So David, when you're looking at this list and you're thinking of some other Chargers who could have made this list as potentially racking up the biggest stats in one of these categories, who would it be?
Okay, so I think the first guy that comes to mind is one of the best defensive backs in the league and a guy who doesn't get talked about a lot, and that's Casey Hayward. Back in 2016, Casey Hayward led the league in interceptions with 7, so he's already shown that he has the ability to do that. Last year, the top guys in interceptions, Stephon Gilmore, Anthony Harris, and Tre'Davious White, who all had 6. So if he replicates that again, he could potentially see himself at the tops of the league in interceptions. I think another guy who could lead the league in receiving touchdowns is a guy like Mike Williams, who has shown a propensity for big plays And he also had a year in 2018 where he had 10 receiving touchdowns. Who knows how he's going to be used in this style of offense, but if he is used in red zone situations, he absolutely could produce many touchdowns. He has that type of profile. He's already shown that he could get that done. And then another guy I think who is always going to be in the conversation for receptions in the AFC is Keenan Allen. Last year, he tied with DeAndre Hopkins, probably one of the best receivers in the NFL, at 104 receptions. So he is a perennial threat in that category.
Yeah, and obviously this was an entire NFL list. And in the NFL, when Michael Thomas exists, it's always going to be hard to be the top reception guy. But tops in the AFC, I absolutely believe it. And for Mike Williams, obviously last year he had a down year with only 2 receiving touchdowns. Before that, it was 10. And the guy they project to have the most is Zach Ertz with 12. So if you have 10 in a season, there's no reason that you shouldn't be able to get 12. And we all know with Mike Williams' jump ball ability, with his big play ability leading the NFL in yards per reception last season, he definitely has a chance to be atop of that list. And I think he'll be closer to the top than many people think. But we do have 2 more segments to get into. We're going to be talking about the 5 burning questions the Chargers have offensively, and also get into Austin Eckler's contract and whether a running back can have a good multi-year contract coming up right after this. But first, I need to tell you guys that if you're having car troubles and if you're trying to find a part for your car and you don't know if you're getting the best price, you're not alone. I've done it many times. Almost any time my car has broken down, I've gotten quotes on different parts, and a lot of times places are out of stock and I never know if I'm getting the best price. But I can change all of that with rockauto.com. They have the stock to just produce anything better than any traditional chain storefront. You don't have to wait for something on back order for it to come into the store and go get it. They will deliver the part that you need directly to your door, and you will be getting the same price as any mechanic would and any non-seller as well. So rockauto.com is the best place to go. You can get basically anything there, from brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks. All you got to do is go to rockauto.com and check out the catalog, which is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Best of all, the prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low. All you got to do is go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck, and write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. All right, guys, well, there was an article over the weekend that caught my eye, and it was an article from LASportsHub.com that said 5 burning questions for the Chargers on offense. So this was something I thought was important, and I think there are some really big questions on here. So before the Chargers get into training camp and all of those things, let's talk about some of the things that they're facing going into it with these 5 burning questions. And I think the first 2 questions can honestly kind of be combined into one question. The first question is, how long will Tyrod Taylor start? And the second question is, when will the Justin Herbert era begin? So unless there's some disastrous injury or something like that to Tyrod Taylor, it's hard to imagine anyone besides Justin Herbert getting the nod if Tyrod Taylor isn't the guy trotting out there as their starter. So, John, I think this is a double-sided question, because when Tyrod Taylor starts, I mean, whenever that ends, it's going to be the Justin Herbert show from then on out, I would have to believe. So how long do you think that's going to be? And do you think it automatically just goes to Justin Herbert after that?
Well, if Tyrod starts off bad, let's say it's maybe 1-4, 1-5, I think that's when the Tyrod era comes to an end, and it will be Justin Herbert who takes over for multiple reasons, including you want to fill up that stadium. And if Tyrod's losing games, you got to bring in Herbert, or else you're basically going to be losing a lot of stuff, especially during this COVID-19 season. You're going to have to keep the fans around. And when it comes to Tyrod, if Tyrod maybe keeps it at 500, he could probably keep his job throughout the whole season until, like, maybe they're out of the playoff race. If they're out of the play, when they are eliminated mathematically from the playoff race, then they probably get Herbert in, because it'll be Tyrod's last season. So you want to see what your guy has. You want to see if Herbert can change from game to game on game film, something to work on the whole offseason. The only way Tyrod keeps his job is if he keeps winning, really.
Yeah, you think that the Chargers are dedicated to leaving Tyrod in and letting Justin Herbert season a little bit more. I mean, you definitely don't want to rush a rookie quarterback in. We've seen how many times that has blown up in teams' faces, and how many young quarterbacks' careers, like even Josh Rosen, for example, where you look at it and you're like, Yeah, he ended up sucking, but at the same time, he was in a very, very bad situation, and it's hard to tell what would have happened had he gone into a better situation. So Justin Herbert, in this scenario, comes into a very talented roster with a ton of offensive weapons and comes into a situation that most rookie quarterbacks don't get to. But at the same time, if you're putting him in there too soon, it could definitely damage him. So for the Chargers, if you're committed to it, are you so committed that even if you start slipping out of the playoff race, you're willing to let the entire season ride on Tyrod Taylor's shoulder, even if he's not getting the job done? That's going to be the question, because the Chargers start falling out of playoff contention. Like you said, if they start 1-5, if they start 1-4, I mean, they could definitely try to, you know, switch things up. I mean, we saw them almost bench Phillip Rivers last year. That was obviously an awful season. You just never know. But I think the Justin Herbert era will begin after Tyrod Taylor eventually gets benched or they fall out of playoff contention. I definitely fall in line with you on that one. So the next one goes to Hunter Henry. And the question is, what will Hunter Henry's impact be in 2020? What it says is, after tearing his ACL in 2018, Hunter Henry rebounded nicely in 2019, 12 starts, a career-high 55 receptions and 5 touchdowns. It was essentially just another year for him to prove he can be a strong part of this Chargers offense. David, going into this, obviously the most important part for Hunter Henry is health. He still hasn't made it through a full season yet uninjured, which is something that has to change, especially for him going into a contract year. But the other part of it is, we just don't know what Hunter Henry's role is now that Tyrod Taylor is the quarterback.
Yeah, no, we don't. I mean, looking back on Tyrod Taylor's stats and, you know, how he connected with tight ends during his time as a starting quarterback, the most touchdowns the tight end had while he was the starter was 4. Wow. You know, so I'm not exactly expecting a lot of looks to go Hunter Henry's way, and that's kind of a shame, because there were times a couple of years ago where the offense was at its absolute best when Hunter Henry was getting 5 or 6 or 7 receptions a game, and he was helping keeping the offense moving and just opening things up for Mike Williams and Keenan Allen, and maybe KJ Hill will be able to do that as well. But all these things are not really lining up in a way that is going to enhance what Hunter Henry does or allow him to make his money this season. This is going to be, he's really going to have to show out, and really he's going to have to kind of make some things out of nothing, because he might not have as many opportunities with the ball going his way with Tyrod Taylor as the quarterback, as opposed to when it was Phillip Rivers. So we'll have to see what style of offense the Chargers are going to run and how they're going to incorporate the tight end position.
I would say differently. I think Hunter Henry might be the focal point more than even Keenan Allen in this offense, because it's going to be a run first offense. And that means the tight end is usually your primary target on third downs, which is usually what comes up on 3rd and 2, 3rd and 3 when you run the ball a lot. And the tight end is usually your key guy.
The tight end might be the key guy, but not exactly for Tyrod Taylor with how his offenses were run, especially when he was the starting quarterback. They were, but I mean,
this is a different offense they're going to be running. So as far as that stat compels a lot of stuff, the Chargers are running a run-first offense, whereas Tyrod was in a pass-first offense. And so he was expected to throw to the wide receivers more, and that's what he was surrounded with.
He wasn't in a pass-first offense. He had LeSean McCoy as his running back that ran the ball all the time.
And threw it to him a lot.
I mean, either way, I'll be the mediator here. I think there's good points on both sides. The one thing I would point to is Tyrod's ability to throw to the middle of the field. And Daniel Popper wrote an article a couple months ago just about looking back on his time in Buffalo and just watching him not be able to throw to the middle of the field, which is an area that's heavily dominated by Hunter Henry. Will we see a lot more two tight end situations and just have the tight end on the field more 11 personnel? I definitely think that we could see that. And I think, obviously, with different routes and whoever comes up with the best rapport with Tyrod Taylor, which we haven't really been able to see yet, we'll understand a little bit better. But we also haven't seen, you know, what the tight end's role is in a Shane Steichen run offense. The only thing we've heard so far is that, you know, he does have ties going back to Greg Roman, who just ran the runningest offense in the NFL last season and one of the runningest offenses of all time last year in Baltimore. But that's a very, very different team. And the Chargers have too many offensive weapons to not try to get these guys involved. But it's a lot of mouths to feed. So let's get to the fourth burning question from this article. This one is a better question, John, because it's about KJ Hill and when he will burst onto the scene. A lot was made of the Chargers picking Hill in the 7th round and just the precipitous drop of his draft stock, even letting him be available to the Chargers in the 7th round. The Chargers said they weren't planning on getting another wide receiver, but he fell into their lap, and it's hard to blame them for going that way. But I think the biggest question here is, John, is if he wants to burst onto the scene, he probably has to win that third wide receiver role, which isn't necessarily a given since the Chargers took a wide receiver two rounds ahead of him.
Yes, he is going to have to earn that number three spot, especially since Joe Reed is more of a all-around type of wide receiver that they can use in a bunch of different ways. And KJ Hill is a pretty speedy type threat wide receiver. So you can make a lot of routes with him, but is he going to be that guy that does reverses and wide receiver screens like Joe Reed will? I don't know. But the thing with KJ Hill is if he wants to explode onto the scene, he's going to have to get himself open, which means he needs to work on his footwork as much as Keenan Allen works on his footwork. If you get yourself open enough with someone like Tyrod Taylor, Tyrod's going to throw you that ball. Whether you get to have a lot of yards after the catch or not, it's going to be a different story. But if you're showing, hey, I can catch a 12-yard pass just as easily as Keenan Allen can, you might be the guy taking Keenan Allen's spot on this roster if the Chargers can't afford him next year. And that would be really stepping onto the scene. But if he's just this role player that's getting maybe one or two catches a game if he's lucky, and that's just because someone forgot about him in the middle of the third quarter, and he's really just going to be taking a step back every single year until somebody allows him to be that one or two receiver.
Well, I think for him, I mean, he's going to have to produce, and he's going to have to do it with no offseason, you know, training camp in a normal sense. He's going to be set behind the eight ball on that aspect. And coming into the league at a position that can be very hard to transition into the NFL, especially when you don't have the athletic gifts. I mean, KJ Hill doesn't have the athletic gifts. He was knocked for his 40 time, but he also ran a faster 40 time than Keenan Allen did, which also saw him drop to the third round because of that time. So I think that's a good question. Keenan Allen, I mean, played 53% of his snaps out of the slot last season. He is mostly in the slot, I mean, when you look at that, but it's not that much. He definitely plays on the outside a lot too. I think both Joe Reed and KJ Hill will probably play in the slot, especially considering that Reed doesn't do very good in press coverage. So get him in the slot, get him some off coverage in the slot that's going to help him and his release as he tries to get up the field, which is important. But the Chargers are running a lot of those gadget plays. They've already talked about using him as a running back as well, which is hard to imagine given the Chargers running back situation right now and that crowded backfield room. But I think KJ Hill has the inside shot because I think he is the most polished receiver of the two of them. Joe Reed definitely has some work, but has the explosiveness that KJ Hill doesn't have. But it's going to be very interesting to see. And I think if someone could carve out a role for himself, it's going to be hard. I mean, I don't think bursting onto the scene will be it. I mean, it'll be three or four catches, five catches, something like that. But getting into the last burning question, I think this is something that looms very large for this season because it comes from a place of inconsistency, and that is, can Mike Williams build off a strong 2019 season? We all know about Mike Williams' first season as a Charger, injury riddled, and that has kind of, you know, been a lot of his career. I mean, he played through injuries last season. He's been bumped up, bruised up, hurt, and basically his entire career so far, David. But we already saw him, you know, put up the 10 touchdown season. Now we just saw him get his first 1,000-yard receiving season. Obviously, now it's Tyrod Taylor, but it is going to be important for him to become that consistent all-around receiver and not someone who's relying on 50-50 jump balls for all of his production.
I was about to say, you took the words right out of my mouth, man. The consistency is really going to be the name of the game. We had a high TD season. We had over 1,000-yard season. Now we need to put those together. We need to have over 1,000 yards receiving, and we need to have more than 10 receiving touchdowns because Mike Williams has shown that he has the ability to do that. He can't really worry too much about who's throwing him the football. He really needs to worry about winning more of those one-on-ones, especially in the red zone. That's something that he's had a little bit of trouble with. And for a receiver of his size, he shouldn't be struggling like that. He should have a lot more success. He should be mossing a lot more defenders than he has been. He needs to do that a lot better. If he's able to be 100% fully healthy and not have to worry about his knee and not have to worry about how he lands, he can just go out there and play freely. This guy has the potential to be a well-rounded wide receiver, and he has all the incentive in the world to do that because he is another guy who's going to be coming into a contract here very soon where he wants to put his best foot forward and start making big-time money.
And I think, honestly, one of the things that this does, this awkward gap because of the coronavirus and having players have to report later than they normally would, is it also lets people have the longest rest they've ever had as professionals, right? I mean, for a guy like Justin Jackson or Forrest Lamp or Nazir Adderley, even Mike Williams, to have all of this off time. You can question the conditioning and all of that, but you would have to think that just having a rest of that physical contact would definitely have to help. And the last note that I'll mention in here is, how do you have five burning questions about the offense and not have one of them be about the Chargers running game? Because whether it's how many carries are each one of these guys going to get, is Austin Ekeler really going to be the main back? What is Josh Kelly's role going to be? Will they stay committed to being a run-first offense, which we've seen them fail to do in the past? All of those things are burning questions on my mind, so it'll have to be something that we get into on another day, because we do have one more question about said running backs, and this one's about Austin Ekeler and his contract and whether or not it's a bargain, coming up right after this. All right, guys, to wrap up the show today, I saw another article over the weekend asking if Austin Ekeler is a bargain, and I think when you look at his production and what he's done and you see his contract, you would think, you know, that doesn't seem very crazy to think that's a good deal. But obviously, being a running back in the NFL means that you're probably not going to get paid as lucratively as some of the other positions, because the wear and tear on your body, the shelf life of running backs, is lower than it is for most positions. So when you look at Austin Ekeler's contract, 4 years, $24.5 million, and then you look at what some of the other running backs are getting paid, David, when you look at Austin Ekeler's contract, knowing that, you know, giving running backs multi-year extensions and things like that is frowned on in the league, do you think it's still a good deal?
Yeah, I mean, also, I think they paid the right guy, too. I mean, they already offered a contract to Melvin Gordon for what was reported to be over $10 million per year, which he obviously declined and then eventually signed with the Broncos. But they decided to reward Austin Ekeler, a guy who fought his way onto this roster, who really proved his worth, and was very successful year over year and improved year over year. So I think in the grand scheme of things, when you look at his contract and you see guys getting $64 million, $90 million, $52 million, and then you see Austin Ekeler getting $24.5 million, you say, that's a really good value contract because of everything that Austin Ekeler is going to bring. You can't talk about Austin Ekeler without talking about his receiving chops and how he's pretty much a slot receiver as well. His versatility and his all-around game, I think, warrants this contract. He earned this money, and I do think it's a great value.
Well, I think the only big question about Austin Ekeler is he doing enough running the football to make that contract valuable, as far as is he, you know, really being a running back that can also do everything, like a Christian McCaffrey, who's going to perennially lead the league in yards from scrimmage. And I think, obviously, given more opportunities and not force feeding the ball to Melvin Gordon, we'll see what he can do with a larger workload if they decide to do that for him this year, John. But do you think that he has to be able to run close to 1,000 yards per season to make this a valuable contract? Are you good with him just being that role player who's also a dynamic receiver and still worth paying him $6.125 million, which ranks 10th in the NFL?
I don't think he needs to get 1,000 yards. I mean, he has to be a legit number one running back who is run first, basically, and just happens to be good at catching the ball. But he's pretty even when it comes to receiving and running, with splitting the carries and splitting the receptions. So as long as he keeps up having maybe, say, 600 to 700 rushing yards and 700 to 800 receiving yards, something like that, and is still getting double-digit touchdowns, I think he's still considered a bargain. To say what he should do to just live up to the contract at the very minimum, maybe have 500 rushing, 500 receiving, and 6 touchdowns, maybe that's to make it even on the contract. But with what he did last year, he deserved way more. That contract's a bargain for sure.
I mean, some of the guys that are close to him in annual average value: Tevin Coleman, Giovanni Bernard, Jordan Howard, Duke Johnson. I mean, even Duke Johnson, like, he's not run first, and he's making almost as much as Austin Ekeler is, right? I mean, obviously he got that, you know, with the Houston Texans and the Cleveland Browns, not the two best front offices as far as making decisions. But I think for what he brings to the table, I think he can definitely do it. And I think really what it comes down to, and this article brings it up, is just sustainability at that size. I think one thing he has going for him is the fact that he's so compact, he's so strong, that it doesn't really matter how small he is for the most part. But in the article, they talk about some of the other guys with his diminutive stature that have been drafted. And what he says is, the only running backs under 5'11 and under 200 pounds to be drafted above the fourth round are C.J. Spiller, Javid Best, Isaiah Pede, and LaMichael James. He says, not a stellar track record. So, David, I think That is a question. And now going into it is, can he stay healthy with an increased workload? Or do you think that they're just going to try to keep him on somewhat of a pitch count and let the other two guys, Josh Kelly and Justin Jackson, and even maybe a little bit of Joe Reed to kind of fill in the rest of it and try to kind of, you know, save some of that tread on Austin Eckler's tires?
Yeah, I think the Chargers know exactly how Austin Eckler works best, you know, having him on the team for the last several years. They know that he's not a guy that's built to run in between the tackles, you know, 15, 20 times a game. That's just not the style of player that he is. And I think the Chargers already want to employ a three-headed monster at the running back position. They want to give split carries with all of these guys, and I think that would probably be the best approach anyway. You want to put each of these running backs into situations that lend to their skill set. Austin Eckler, obviously, he can run in between the tackles, but he's not built to do that down after down. That's why you have guys like Josh Kelly that you bring in. That's why you have change of pace guys like Justin Jackson. The Chargers want to do that anyway. They want to employ all of these guys. I think that's the best way to keep Austin Eckler fresh and the best way to get the most production out of all three running backs.
The best way to keep Eckler fresh, really, is just if you're going to run the ball, keep it outside of the tackles. Keep it from getting shoved up against everybody in the middle of a hole by a linebacker, which can easily cause a concussion or something.
Just kind of sticking with the same thing of value contracts. When you look at the Chargers, David, and their contracts, who would you say is the biggest value that they have right now?
I mean, I think the biggest value is right there at the starting quarterback position with Tyrod Taylor. I mean, it's incredible value. I mean, when you look around the league, there are 29 quarterbacks that are making more money than Tyrod Taylor is. And 18 of those quarterbacks are making $21+ million a year. So when you look at Tyrod Taylor's $5.5 million contract and you see all the, and you compare it to those other guys as far as value is concerned, I mean, that is an absolute steal. You have a starting quarterback making only $5.5 million. That is incredible.
Yeah, a starter making backup money. I mean, it was average price for a backup, and it's a very, very good price as a starter. John, would you have any contention? Who would you select for maybe the best value on the Chargers right now?
It'd probably have to be Derwin James, really. I mean, with what he does on a rookie contract is pretty amazing. Just imagine if he didn't get injured, what he'd really look like right now on that rookie contract. It's kind of like how Patrick Mahomes is doing all this on his rookie contract. It's the same thing with Derwin James. Is he leading us to a Super Bowl? No, but he's changing the whole face of the defense and is making plays all over the field on a rookie contract. That's a guy who's got to be one of the best deals on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about Derwin James just making about $3 million, $3.097 million to be exact, and what he brings to the table, I mean, getting a top three player at his position for, you know, $3 million a season has to
Beast.
Be up there. I mean, and obviously we're going off of rookie contracts, but talking about rookie contracts, and let's look at a guy like Desmond King, and we're obviously not sure what his role is going to be, but he's going into this season and his four-year deal with an average value of $669,000, which is less than Scott Questenberry, Easton Stick, Trent Scott, Cole Toner, and undrafted free agents Bobby Hawley, the guy from the XFL, Storm Norton. I mean, he's making so little and producing so much compared to what he's actually getting paid. So I, even though we don't know what his position is going to be, I'd have to throw that up there as one of the best values as well. But that is going to wrap things up for today's show. Thank you to everyone who came in and listened. We need some more voicemails, guys, or you can even text into the voicemail line. The number is 323-524-7924. You can get any Chargers voicemail on there, and we'll play it on the show and play your voice on the show. So make sure you call into that. Make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or give us a follow on Spotify, and make sure you rate and review. We would really appreciate it, as well as giving us a follow on Twitter if you don't already, at Locked On LAC, or to like the Facebook page Locked On Chargers as well. We'll be back with you guys on Wednesday with some more fresh content. But until then, guys, take it easy and go Bolts.